Hey, Sinister Squad, this is Elon Musk. Due to some unforeseen audio issues we found in the editing process for our recent episode, we are choosing to drop an episode that was not released for Farah's prior podcast, The Conversation Cabin. This is a great episode where Farah has an eye-opening and also a conversation with Jessica Jonas, the cryptid huntress. Hopefully we get the audio issue squared away on our recent episode. But for now, enjoy Farah and Jessica's conversation.
Jessica Jones, also known as the Cryptid Huntress. Jessica is a renowned researcher of cryptids, Sasquatch, alien encounters, and government cover-ups, as well as a practitioner of remote viewing. In addition to her research, Jessica also runs an online store called War Women Goods, specializing in jewelry and watches with a unique Southwestern style. With her passion for the unknown, Jessica is a force to be reckoned with in the worlds of paranormal research. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Farah. Thank you for having me on today.
You're a busy woman. So thank you for giving me your time. I do appreciate it. I have many questions to ask you and what you are passionate about. I want my listeners to know you if they're not familiar with Jessica, the Cryptid Huntress. Tell us a little bit about who you are, why this is passionate for you, and how you got into all of this.
Okay, I'm Jessica. I'm just a normal everyday person out of Georgia with some extraordinary hobbies. So about 20, I started doing Bigfoot field research. And I am actually a member of three different teams. We go out and it started off as Bigfoot field research. But being out in the field, when you do enough field research, you start noticing it's not just Bigfoots out in the woods. There's all sorts of weird stuff going on out there. A lot of paranormal activity. I actually grew up being very attuned to the paranormal and the supernatural. I saw ghosts when I was a kid, dead people. I had an affinity for like UFOs and aliens and stuff. And I would take my little nap mat from kindergarten out to my front yard. I grew up on a farm out in Georgia. I live in Georgia. And I would go look at the sky at night, look up to the sky for UFOs when I was a kid. And so I've always had a connection to ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, any kind of creepy monsters and stuff,
right?
You know, things that go bump in the night. But I was never really scared of that kind of stuff. I also come from a long lineage of very psychic women in my family, but they didn't call it that. Nobody ever called it that. But just, you know, you couldn't get away with anything when I was a kid. Mom always knew everything before I ever did something. I also had a lot of paranormal stuff that happened throughout the generations in my family as well. Like my grandmother, my great-grandmother, and my great-aunt, they had a possible alien abduction experience back in the 19th, driving down a rural road in northwest Georgia, in a place called Rome, Georgia.
I'm familiar with that area.
Yeah. They were driving down the road on a highway one night, and a light came down over their car, enveloped the entire car, and the next thing they know, they're two counties over, I think it was one county over, was 20 miles away, and hours had passed. It 1 to 2 hours had passed, it was almost like a millisecond.
Gosh.
Yeah. So they attributed that to angels, or super religious Christian women with, you know, like with the Ten Commandments in their front yard and everything. And, you know, they said that was angels taking them out of harm's way.
That's interesting. Okay.
Anytime they were asked about, that's what they said happened to them. But knowing what I know, I think it might have been aliens. I don't know. But everybody in my family, we have a long line of paranormal, supernatural stories going through in the generation. I started doing Bigfoot field research. The first time that I ever went out and did research, I had UFOs flying over my head and all that kind of stuff. It's been a crazy ride. I'm actually part of three teams. One of my teams has documented a portal. We've sent people into it, and they came back out to describe what happened to them. That has not been released to the general public yet. That will be coming out hopefully pretty soon. Yeah, I've waited 10 years to ever go public with the research that we do. I do research all over the South, from Georgia to North Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, you name it, South Carolina, Virginia. We research all over the South pretty much. We have our hot spots. We have three or more areas that we research that are very similar to Skinwalker Ranch. And a matter of fact, the head of one of my teams wrote a book called The Meadow Project. explorations into the South Skinwalker Ranch. That's Trey Hudson. And that's the team where we go out there. We originally went out looking for Bigfoot. We always have like orbs activity, orbs to light beings, aliens, UFOs, portals, interdimensional stuff happening. Like Bob, one of our teammates, he turned into like a fireball one night and shot across the GPS and went across the field. It's just weird. We had the weirdest stuff that happens. Yeah. And you can understand like why I didn't go public for so long, because the stuff that we experience is so out there that people wouldn't believe us if we told them back in the day. So not only were we having all this crazy activity, the head of one of my teams, my original team, Enigma Research Group, he is a excellent remote viewer and is formally trained in it. And when we had some extremely intense activity, the first time I ever actually went out with their team, we had a possible abduction, like alien abduction kind of experience that happened, UFOs flying overhead, time loss, equipment malfunctions, a whole bunch of weird stuff went down. And he told us, he said, oh, I think it's time for me to go ahead and I think it's time to teach everybody, train everybody on our team in remote viewing. That way we can look into stuff from a different perspective and see what's really going on when we're having missing time, when we're having UFOs flying around us, when we have lights in the woods, we have orbs floating around, when we have Sasquatch screaming and noises we can't figure out what they are. My team consists of wildlife biologists, nuclear scientists. We have people that are members of like the Department of Defense and firefighters, and military guys, nurses, people that work pretty much the entire spectrum. When I first started doing this, I worked for the state of Georgia, actually. I was running an agency for women. And so I did not feel the need to explain myself to a bunch of people about getting out in the woods and going Bigfooting. So I would just tell the commissioners, people I worked for, that I was going camping. And back, and this was 2011, you didn't see Bigfoot stickers on all the cars. There wasn't a show called Finding Bigfoot. There was none of that back then. It was something that sparked my interest. I had gone to a meeting with my mom one night where these guys were giving a presentation. My mom said, hey, you really want to come to this? These Bigfoot field researchers are giving a presentation. I think you're going to enjoy it. And so I went and I started, these guys knew what they were talking about. They had the tracks. They were professional trackers. They were survivalists. They had been researching Bigfoot for a long time. And they also took an unconventional approach because they were into the mind, body, spirit element of Bigfoot. Okay. The psychic aspect of Bigfoot, mind melding, mind speak, all that kind of stuff. They experienced all that. This was back in 2011. They had been doing this for years before I met them. So I was late to the game back then.
No better people to match up with. They have a wealth of knowledge.
Yes. Like I said, wildlife biologists, doctors, nurses, stock traders, whatever. We have such a weird, like a crazy, wild group of people. But it was just great because we're all from different backgrounds, but we all teach each other different skills. Whatever we know, we teach.
Well, it's good to be diverse. Everybody brings something to the table. And you have so many different aspects of the way they look at it.
Exactly.
So I think that's great.
Yeah, but we're all trained together as a team in remote viewing, too.
I was just about to ask you, what is remote viewing and how do you use it in your research?
Well, I use remote viewing every single day of my life because it's all about mind control, and it's not me controlling other people's minds, which I wish I could. That'd be awesome. But it's controlling my mind. And when you're out in the field, like I know you live on a property that's full of activity, and you know how it can mess with your head.
Right? It does, yes.
Like being out there, being scared, being put in a fearful position of feeling like you're threatened, it's hard to keep your head on your shoulders sometimes when you're in a weird predicament. And learning remote viewing, all the skills we've trained for years and years, and it's not just about using your psychic abilities. It's about controlling your thoughts, controlling your mind, staying calm, noticing energetic shifts, everything in your environment. And so the history of remote viewing, I am no expert on anything, by the way. I just know how to do it and I love doing it. Remote viewing is something that governments from all over the world use today, whether they admit it or not. But back, especially during the Cold War era, the Russians, the Soviets were using remote viewing. They were utilizing psychic spies to spy on the enemy. And so, of course, the Americans had to do the same. And so there were programs like Project Jedi, Project Stargate, all these different programs where they were utilizing remote viewers to go in and psychically spy on other people. Psychic spying is not only, I guess what they use it for was like to locate targets. And that could be like missing people, caches of weapons or bombs. Right. It could be anything, I guess. Remote viewing is being assigned a target, not knowing what that target is, and using your senses and your psychic abilities, all your faculties, your sensory stuff, any kind of thoughts, your smell, sense, your taste, touch, whatever, to locate a target psychically. So the way I describe it is like a scientific way to use your psychic abilities. What I use the most, I've been trained in different modes of remote viewing. My favorite that I use is coordinate remote viewing. And that's where I am assigned a set of numbers and that's all I get. But we call them coordinates. And it's usually a set of 8 numbers, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And they're random numbers, but they are assigned a target. And the target could be anything from an event. It could be an object. It could be a missing person. It could be like a cryptid, for instance. And what I like to do when it comes to remote viewing is I like to see, first off, I'm remote viewing like a cryptid or something paranormal. I got to see if it's real. Oh, and so I have to go in there, I start digging around, and my data will let me know if I'm looking at something that's real or not. I won't get any data if it's not real. I've only had one target that I was assigned. There's nothing to it. And it was a very famous dogman story. But we won't get into that because people will get upset with me. But, I'll tell you off air.
Okay. That sounds good.
I'm not going to put it out there like this, but it is a cutting edge. But what my team does is there's nobody else really doing that, especially when it comes to like Bigfooting and being out in the field and being able to remote view while we're in the field. And before we go out, we can remote view the area that we're going to go investigate to see what kind of activity is going on there before we even get there.
Wow. Yeah. I wish I could do something like that. Does it wear you out after you do it?
Oh, yeah.
It's something.
Totally.
It
depends. So I can have an easy target, right? And usually I've been getting assigned my targets by my friend Barry Littleton. That's one of my best buddies. He's an amazing researcher. He's got a great YouTube channel, Barry Littleton, over there on YouTube. Y'all go check him out. And his Patreon. He's really good. I taught him how to assign me targets and coordinates. And so he gets me these crazy targets. I never know what to expect when I get some numbers from him. I've looked into the Kushtika, like the Otter Man.
I've heard of that one.
That was wild. And he and I do shows on these. As soon as I get the targets and I do them, we do shows on them. And it is phenomenal because all I'm given is a set of numbers, those coordinates. There is a process to remote viewing. I get the numbers and I take a stack of white printer paper and my pens. I have a stack of pens and a stack of paper and I write out my graph and my chart and everything. We have stages. It's like stage one. I usually go stage 1 through 5. And so as soon as I write those numbers down, my hand starts moving down the page and I do automatic writing and I get these, we call them ideograms. And as I write those ideograms down, I go through another step and write those out. And then all of a sudden, all this information starts pouring out. It's like the aperture opens and I'm pulling information out of the matrix from every direction. I'm hearing people make fun of me because I'm pretty open about how I get my information. And a lot of times I'll hear like rap lyrics. Like I found a friend's missing dog one time.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
And it was, the lyrics bigger than hip hop. That song, it said about the wolf cries. And I just wrote around wolf cry. Turns out it was her missing dog whose name was Wolf.
Yeah. Oh my. And you found it?
Yeah. I helped them locate their dog. Yes.
Oh my Lord. 100%. That's amazing.
I actually lost my dog last week. It was like a week or two ago. My dog ran off at our farm and I thought she had gone down the road. I have a German Shepherd. I was devastated. I could not find her. She got lost in the pasture. The hay was too high. The first thing I did was I contacted the head of my team and he remote viewed it for me because I was too, I didn't know if she had gone outside the gate or not. And we ended up finding her. Eventually, she had gotten stuck on the other side of the lake. Her leg was stuck in her harness, so she couldn't swim across the lake and she was panicked. But we ended up finding her. So it ended up being fine. But I immediately contacted, he helped me locate the area where she was and it correlated to where I thought she was. And I had tracked her too. I've been trained in tracking, human and animal tracking. I tracked where she was, where I thought she had gone. I saw where she went, but it looked like she had gone out of that pasture. It was just crazy. I ultimately did find her. But yeah, I write down everything that I hear, everything that I smell. I hear things. I can taste stuff, which is really weird. You start tasting things in your mouth and you don't leave anything out. You write everything down. There's charts. There's somewhere to write every single sensation that you're experiencing on those charts. And after several pages of information, you've got a stack of paper with a whole bunch of information and you can pretty much look at it and tell what your target was.
I've never known about remote viewing in a way of how you described. It is absolutely fascinating. Can you describe a particularly interesting cryptid or alien encounter that you've researched with the help of remote viewing?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. I've remote viewed a ton of cryptids at this point. I was given a target by Barry. It was El Chupacabra. So there's several different types of chupacabras. Mm-hmm. And this was one from 1995 in Puerto Rico. Oh, I was just given a set of numbers. I didn't know what it was. So there's another remote viewer. His name's John Vavinko, and he's very well known. Barry had met him a while back, and he talked with Barry, and he did like an interview, and they talked about this, how he had remote viewed these chupacabras. And they had been created in a lab. They were like chimeras or something. They were in a lab, and there was a hurricane down in Puerto Rico, and they escaped this lab. And they were wreaking havoc all over the island, killing goats and sucking their blood. And the way they were described is they looked like aliens. They didn't look like the typical dog cobra. They looked like little aliens with spikes going down their backs, and kangaroos or dogman looking legs. But they had a gray alien face. So Barry wanted to see what I would come up with, because these had already been remote viewed by John Vavinko and his team of remote viewers. When I got done with my target, Barry said, "What was this? What do you think it was?" And I said, "Well, it was definitely a dinosaur, or it was some kind of a cryptid chimera, and it had something to do with dinosaur DNA." And he was like, "Whoa, I've never thought of that." And he said, "Well, can you remote view it again and get deeper into it?" And I was like, "Sure, I can." I got the same data that John Vavinko got. I was picking up like a reptilian reptile, but it was also a mammal. And that happens sometimes when I'm remote viewing cryptids. I get like an amphibious reptile, which doesn't make sense, right? An amphibian and a reptile are different. That was what with the Loveland frogmen. Those were real. That's what I got for that. With this thing, it was, and then, like I said, I didn't know what it was. And you look at pictures of this thing that were drawn out, and I drew what looked like a dinosaur looking figure, but it was a mammal and a reptile. They say that it was a gray alien, but it had kangaroo legs. So think about that. They said, and he said it was like a marsupial.
I never heard of that. When I think of chupacabra, I think of the reports of a dog-like hyena, wolf. There's been a couple different descriptions, but the mammal and the reptile, that's what I'm not getting.
That's a chimera. If there's anything that I've learned through doing remote viewing is that we have a lot of government experimentation going on. Let me backtrack. I can't even say government. I'm going to say special agencies. I don't even know who these people are. I like to say government. It's easy to put a label on it, but I think there's agencies bigger than our government.
Yeah, I've always thought that there's a force over the government, or we're working with aliens and there's still a force over the government, and the government is just there to sweep everything under the rug. Have you personally seen a cryptid or experienced an alien encounter yourself? And what was that time?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. So I have experienced several different cryptids. Most notably, I've experienced Bigfoots many times. Okay. I have never had a face-to-face, up-close, personal meeting with a Bigfoot. They've been around my tent. They've been at my camp. They've been all over the place. And I've seen them from a distance, but I have never seen one up close. And I've been doing this since 2011 in the field, extensive research. But they're there. I've even had something, which can I say for sure it was a cloaked Bigfoot? No. But there was an evening where I was walking up. I would bait. I love being bait.
That's me. My friends will always say I'm the one that's the first one to go. I'll go.
Yeah, me too.
I'll do it.
So I would bait. I was walking up to this tree line. I had a whole bunch of dudes out at the bottom of the hill. And this is a place we call the UFO field. And it wasn't the UFO field until after this night.
Okay.
Weekend. But it was like field number one at the time. And this is up in the mountains. And the guys were like, "Hey, why don't you go?" This is the first time I had ever been out. That was the first weekend I ever went in my entire life.
Okay.
I didn't care what happened to me. I wanted to see if Bigfoot was real. I was gung-ho. I was like, let's do this. Y'all put me in a weird situation. I'll do it. And so I went out. One team was a bunch of dudes. They sat down at the bottom of the field, and they all had their night vision camera, their FLIR thermals, and they were going to watch me to make sure if anything happened to me, at least they'd know what happened to me. But I felt some comfort in that. They said, "Hey, walk up. It's like 100 yards, basically like a football field, up to this tree line, up a hill." There's a guy that had some activity before I got there in this field. And so I started walking. I put on my backpack and took off walking. And I got about halfway up this field, And I heard one of those guys running up behind me, full blast. Like,
oh my God.
I played sports in college and high school. I played rugby for college. I know what it sounds like to have somebody running up behind you to tackle you. That's exactly what it felt like. I thought one of the guys was coming up to scare me. And I was thinking, man, that is so unprofessional. What are these guys doing? And as it got closer to me, or he did, I thought it was one of the dudes, I braced myself, I stopped to be like, okay, you got me. You know what I mean? Whatever it was ran up behind me, it knocked my legs out from underneath me from behind, and it kept going.
Oh my God. Just,
it brushed the backs of my legs. And I didn't totally lose my balance, but I jumped up in the air a little bit because I was like, what the heck was that? And it kept going. But there's nobody there. There's nobody. I heard it and I felt it. There's nobody there. I immediately looked around. I didn't have my flashlight on. I didn't even have a headlamp or anything. We go out there. We don't really do flashlights and headlamps too much. We don't have to. But there was no logs, no sticks. There was nothing that could have tripped me up at all. And I checked immediately. And so what did I do? I just kept walking. I was like, well, that was really weird. But I don't want to look a baby. You know what I mean? So I kept going. And eventually one of the guys did walk up behind me to check on me because they said they had seen me jump up in the air. They were worried that something had happened. And I was like, well, something did happen. Like I said, can I say it was a Sasquatch? No. But while we were standing there, Craig, the guy's name was Craig, came up to check on me. He was one of the founding team members. We walked up to that tree line. He stood there with me. And for whatever reason, I felt called to walk over to the corner. And I stood there for a little while. And JT, one of the guys down at the bottom of the field, he was watching me. And he said that a Bigfoot actually looked out from behind the tree and was staring at me. And he was watching it through his thermal the entire time.
Oh my God. So they saw what possibly knocked you off your feet.
Yeah. Yes. So that was wild. And I didn't know because I didn't have any kind of equipment with me. I was brand new. I was just out there to experience something and to have some fun, make some new friends. We decided the next day, some of us would go back up to that field that next night. And so the guy who saw the Bigfoot through his thermal, he and I decided to go out there and become one with the environment, like all day the next day, and go sit up in that tree line. We'd sit there for so long and camouflage ourselves in hopes that a Bigfoot would eventually walk out and step on us. We were going to have the whole team come out around 9 o'clock that night. We got out there at 3 in the afternoon. In the afternoon. The team came out around 9. So we'd been sitting out there for 6 hours. Wow. When they finally came out, and they were going to be all loud and distracting. But he and I were just going to sit there in hopes that we were going to blend in to where the Bigfoot couldn't see us. And they just come and step on top of us trying to look at our teammates out there. But that was big. Now that I know, those Bigfoots knew we were out there. We weren't hiding from them.
Since you are someone that has a lot of information and you've done field research with Bigfoot, some eyewitnesses have said, when I saw the Bigfoot, it literally disintegrated into nothing. Poof, went away.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts about that?
Yeah. They're absolutely both, 100%. They're supernatural and flesh and blood, flesh and bone.
You.
I believe a lot of them are so ancient here on this earth. They know how to utilize Earth's natural portals.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't think that all of them are on the same level psychically. Some are very basic. Some are constantly looking for food.
Right.
They are just very animalistic types. And I don't want to say like animalistic because I think that they are a peoples. I think that they're like a tribe of people, basically. They're just very feeble, in my opinion. I don't know for positive, but I think they are more human than they are animal, for sure. Some of them are highly intelligent. Some of them probably have some kind of alien DNA. Some of them live in the trees. Some of them live underground. Some utilize portals. I think they're all different. It's like humans. We're all different. We're all different races and religions. And some of us have enhanced human capabilities that we utilize and others of us don't.
And that's what I feel about Bigfoot. Yeah. It's flesh and blood. It's been here for so long. It's been here before us. So it knows where the portals, the vortexes to go in and out. It knows how to stay elusive. It's not just flesh and blood. It has abilities.
Now, I don't think they're all super duper intelligent. I don't think that, but I don't know that for sure. I know that some of the ones that we've remote viewed were working in conjunction with ETs, and their only job was to go hit a button on a device so they could go eat. So I just think there's all sorts of different levels. Just like there's different levels of humans.
Right. Well, I agree with you 100%. Yeah. What have you come across is the most credible evidence that you have seen or heard of as far as Sasquatch?
Just every time we go out, we have activity with Sasquatch. I get all sorts of evidence from my team and all my guests and stuff that I've seen. Do you mean like footprints and
vocalizations,
and tree structures and all that?
What I'm asking is, skeptics with a tree structure. Oh, yes. It's just the trees fell down. It's natural.
Yeah.
Can you describe your time of doing this? What's the difference between real and natural?
Yes, absolutely. Well, see, here's the thing. We're all trained in survivalist skills.
Right.
And we're trained in all sorts of anything that you do out in the woods. So tracking, especially, you can never underestimate the power of a drunk camper and okay. a bunch of bored Boy Scouts. I don't entertain evidence pictures that people bring. First of all, I'm very selective about who I bring on my shows and the evidence that I show on my shows. And I'm not being a snob. I'm just a researcher. And I only put the good stuff out there.
Good
things that
you.
I see with my own eye. If I resonate with the evidence, we'll show it. I don't ever discount anybody's experience because I know that we all have our own experiences, but I also know how to make a debris hut. I know how you can bend trees. There's a whole lot of stuff that is human made. And when you're out there, you want to find Bigfoot. Everything's going to be Bigfoot. And so you have to take a step back sometimes, especially people who are just getting into it or people who haven't been in it for a long time or don't really know what they're looking for. Everything's going to be Bigfoot. So you just have to use your discernment. That's all. I've been doing this for a while, and I'm around some of the best in the Bigfooting field. And so I've been taught by the best, and I know how to use my discernment. I'd get made fun of if I didn't.
Well,
I have a lot of people I have to answer to.
Good for you for bringing the most credible that you feel in your heart is credible evidence. We don't need any more stories.
I don't have the paranoia stuff. We don't entertain that. Well, people have their experiences, and I do not underestimate that. And I don't discount it. But when it comes to the evidence, if I don't see it, then I just don't show it. It doesn't mean it didn't happen, though.
You're not telling anyone that, no, they didn't have the experience. My job is to look it over.
Yes.
Tell you what I think. And if you don't like the answer, I'm sorry, but I thought you came to me for answers. We all want to see something, but we have to stop creating more stories. We have enough stories. How do you balance skepticism and open-mindedness in your research?
Well, I just don't care what people think when it comes to my research. And that's why I didn't go public for so long. Mm-hmm. I waited 10 years and I still didn't mean to go public. I was thrusted out there unwittingly. I'm not going to say I made the mistake because it was the best thing I ever did, actually. I went up to go meet one of my girlfriends. She was volunteering at Camp Disclosure. And she drove down from North Carolina and she was like, you got to come see me. You're in Georgia. Come hang out with me. We got a cabin for the weekend. So I went and it was like a starseed reunion or something, like a galactic starseeds. And I thought it was cool. And so we were out on a hike and one of the guys was asking me about my Bigfoot research. And I was telling him about it. He's like, man, that sounds a lot like that Skinwalker Ranch of the South. And I was like, oh, you know about that? Have you read the book? He goes, yeah, I heard it on Coast to Coast. Like, you know who Jessica J is in that book, right? He goes, is that you?
He was fangirling.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't know. So I was shocked too. I was like, this guy read this book. So the lady who was throwing the conference heard about that. She was like, oh, Jessica, please speak at this conference. And I was like, I guess so. If Amanda's going to be there, I'll go. And my friend.
But if you don't mind me saying, so I feel that there needs to be more women in this fascinating world of going out and field researching. You're the only one that I know that has made her passion. I'm loving that you're here with me right now.
Glad to be here too. My friend Kristen Payton, she's been on my show a couple times and on Space Out Radio too. By the way, I am a host at Space Out Radio and I have my own channel. So we'll talk about that at the end. I forgot to mention all that. But Kristen is on my team and she is the one that actually filmed the portal incident. And then on my other teams, I have two or three women on that team, but it is majority male. It is good to have women on the teams because they're really good at being bait. I'm just kidding. It's just fun.
You're right, though. I do think more females need to get out because it's male dominated and we have a lot to offer. We can bring a different perspective.
It's that frequency and it's that divine feminine energy out there. Really? It's very calming and it does attract a lot of activity. As far as like the psychic thing goes, my entire team is trained in remote viewing, but there are no coincidences in this world. And our team was brought together because perhaps we've done this many lifetimes together. I don't know. There's no telling. I have my suspicions, but for whatever reason, we're all different, but we're all very similar in a lot of ways.
Things happen for a reason. And I think you have your team because they were meant to be your team.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so.
We all have these experiences and asked to speak at that conference and it set me on a trajectory like I never thought I'd be on. I'm here talking with you right now and I've got shows where I talk about Bigfoots and dogmen every other day, pretty much. I'm really loving it. It's part of my spiritual journey that I have embarked on, and it's been a wild ride.
How do you think the study of cryptids and paranormal phenomena can help us better understand ourselves and our place in this universe?
Anytime someone has a experience with the paranormal, the supernatural, or a cryptid, all of it, it raises your consciousness and your awareness. Your vibrational frequency changes. And I like to say that we are changing the world one Bigfoot experience at a time. I do believe that it changes your entire reality. It busts us out of this 3D matrix reality that we're living in, that we've been taught to be a part of, like our own little jail cells, you know, that we're stuck in with all of the fluoride pumped into us and all the bad foods that aren't really foods and the education system, whatever it is that's been put into place, the system that we live in to keep us trapped and to keep us thinking small, living small, being small, and to stop us from being on a spiritual journey and to awaken. And for whatever reason, I've been called to do this, to perhaps potentially help awaken humanity or just help people with my story. I've got a wild story, but we've only scratched surface with the things I've experienced in my life. With the cryptids, that's been a big part of my life, but this experience has really set me on a whole different trajectory in life. And I'm able to raise my awareness and my consciousness, and in effect, I'm helping other people do the same.
You've found your path.
Earth is a place where we come and learn. We're taught lessons. It's a really hard place to be. And humanity needs to be woken up from whatever kind of sleep. And I think the Earth's vibration is changing. And it's time for us to change our vibration to help assist the planet to elevate and to raise the consciousness and the vibration.
And I've done that recently. Like about a year ago, I taught myself to heighten my vibrations. I use a pendulum a lot. And the first month, I could not move that pendulum. So I meditated every day. I thought on it. I slept with it to bond with it. And within a month, my pendulum goes horizontal. It spins right in front of my face. I wanted to find a part of me that I could put into something. And then it gives something back. But how do you think that technology has impacted the study of cryptids and paranormal phenomena? What's your
take? That's interesting, because there's two sides to that, right? Mm-hmm. I believe that it helps in a lot of ways. You know, just having night vision cameras and thermals and flares and all that, we wouldn't have been able to pick up that portal incident that happened, the cube incident in the meadow, had we not had that equipment. Now, I'm the type of researcher that goes out. I don't like carrying anything with me. I just take myself, my vibration, my frequency, and I walk out there and I go out for the experience. Yeah, I take equipment. I have a box full of like ghost hunting equipment and stuff. But we use the same equipment Bigfooting as we do ghost hunting. Okay.
Of course, kind of stuff.
Some of the same stuff. We have other things too, like Geiger counter, because we usually have like radiation spikes, like paranormal stuff going on. We like to check for that. But it's the same like REM pods and EVP recorders. It's all about frequency. So those K2 meters are going to go off in any kind of activity. I started on ghost hunting, and that's a good place to start. You don't need all that stuff when you are aware of your psychic ability and you can feel the energy, and you trust yourself enough to feel the energetic shifts. So you don't need the equipment at that point. Like, I'm not out there to prove. I know that I'm public talking about my research, but I never meant to be public about it. I'm out there to prove it to myself. I never have been out to prove it to anyone but me. But I have people on my teams that I bring on my shows. And so their research is my research as well.
Okay.
We're a team. We do different things. We experiment. And so I got some great stories. And we've had some weird experiences out there. But I'm not out there to prove to people.
Can you tell my listeners a little bit about that portal incident?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So we researched an area. We call it the Meadow. As part of that book I was telling y'all about that Trey Hudson wrote. Mm-hmm. We call it the Skinwalker Ranch of the South. So we just call it the Meadow. You have to hike in there. It's in the middle of the woods, undisclosed location in the south. You have to hike in a pretty good ways through some dense woods to get to an open field. It's several acres of land, like where the meadow is. And there was one evening the team had hiked out into the meadow. We disperse into smaller teams usually. Like we go out as a team and we disperse into small three-man teams or two-man teams. And everybody went around different sides of the meadow. Now, I got to give full disclosure. I had left that afternoon because my son was like 3 years old at the time. Okay. This was about 5 years ago. to go take care of my son. I'd been there before the other part of the week with my team. I go home. I have orbs floating around my house with my son. And his dad, my ex-husband, who I was married to at the time, he had his camera phone out filming my son being cute on my elliptical machine. And all of a sudden, these orbs started floating around my son's head. This is the same night that my team was out there where I had just left the meadow. The team is experiencing the portal. Almost the exact same time. I'm having orbs in my home floating around my son. And we have that on film. So they're out there. They go out to the meadow. They disperse into different sets of teams all over the meadow. And they're just out there observing. We're listening for Bigfoot. Last time I was out there, we heard a gigantic knock like in the meadow. I had something run up by me and grab my butt one night. I was sitting in my chair and something goosed my butt cheek. So I don't know what that was. It could have been a ghost. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But they're all sitting out there. One of the teams was my friend Dave Pardue and Terry Wendell with Rock Hill Bigfoot and North Carolina Cryptid Research. And Kristen, my friend, the only other female on this team. And they're sitting there. Dave notices something in his thermal imaging camera. And it's just an anomaly. He's trying to make out what this thing is. Now, it looks like a big square showing up. And it's a heat signature in the middle of the field. And there's nothing there. There's no trees where this is forming. There were people over on the other side of the meadow. He just knew there was something wrong. And he was like, okay. And it started getting brighter and it started forming like a cube, a large cube, like the size of like a shed that you put behind your house, like a man cave kind of thing or a she shed. It's pretty big. He had Terry look into his camera and was like, do you see what I'm seeing? And Terry was looking and he was like, yeah, there's a cube. Like it had windows or like crosses, like X's in it. It was really weird. It looked like a man-made object, but you couldn't see it with your naked eye. But when they looked through the thermal, they could see it. So they dispatched one of the teams from across the field to walk over and check it out. So I think there were three of them, walked over there. Two of the men are former military, retired. Tim was Special Forces, Army. Bob's retired Navy, search and rescue. Both of them are highly trained, highly skilled. Both are trained in remote viewing. Smart, good dudes. Okay, very smart. Tim was a scientist. Okay. So they walk over to where this cube is. They're guided over to it because they can't see it. As they walk over to it, their heat signatures disappear. And this is an open field. There's no reason on earth for those heat signatures to disappear. Oh. You can still see Lee, one of the guys behind it. He didn't go up to it. He was with them, stood in the background. But as the two other gentlemen walked up to it, it's like they walked in. And let me tell you how they described it. They said that it was like they had walked into a black velvet curtain and the temperature changed. The vegetation on the ground changed from muddy and thick, like grassy, thick to smooth ground. There were no briars, no brush, no nothing. They said they could not see the stars anymore in the sky. The entire environment changed. They said they stood there for a minute and then they were like, all right, something's wrong. I don't know what we've done. I think they even lost radio contact for a minute because we all carry our CB radios so we can keep in touch with base camp while we're out in the field and we can communicate with each other. Each team has our CBs, our Beophone. And I think they lost contact for a second or two.
Now, real quick, while you're saying that, did they hear anything on the other end, those who were listening? Was it silence or did they hear a noise or anything?
No, it wasn't like white noise or anything like that. It happened quickly. Yeah. I do think, from what I remember, they did lose radio contact briefly. But they didn't stay in long enough, thank goodness, for anything bad to happen. They backed out. They didn't know they were inside anything because they couldn't see this thing. They were just standing in a field watching the thermal. I mean, the video is pretty interesting. So you can see them because Kristen had the wherewithal to turn her camera on and start filming it. So you can. So she's the one that actually caught the video of it, the whole entire encounter. When they came out of it, their heat signatures reappeared and the tube shrunk down to a smaller size, and then it moved, and then it disappeared.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Had they stayed in it for a few more seconds, they might have disappeared with it. We don't know.
And were there any after effects from those two?
Bad ones. There's usually radiation spike when we have paranormal stuff happening. Bob got an aggressive form of cancer. Now, I'm not saying this is why he got it. I'm not. And Tim got a bad heart condition. He did not get it diagnosed in time. He didn't know what was wrong and he passed away. But he was young. He was in his 50s, very young. And Bob is still battling to get better from what happened to him. But that happened right after. The stuff that we do is not safe. It can be very dangerous. Any kind of this research especially when we're dealing with portals and aliens, UFOs and things like that. It's not all sunshine and rainbows out there. Speaking of aliens and stuff, when I first started doing this research, the head of my team, we had this experience where we had a possible missing time, possible abduction experience. We didn't know what had happened with some UFOs out in the field doing Bigfoot research. The head of my team suggested we started researching alien abductions and reading books like Communion and The Threat, Secret Life, and
Communion.
Books like that. My collection got out of control because I went on Amazon. They kept suggesting other books. So I like bought like 20 books. But I started reading. Lo and behold, I woke up one night and I had grays in my bedroom. Right? I had two experiences with aliens in my house when that started happening.
Tell me what you saw, Jessica.
Okay. So the first time it happened, I believe it was the first time. It's been a few years since this happened, but and I can still remember what they look like and everything. And it's really interesting because I fell asleep right after I realized what I was looking at both times. But yeah, I just woke up. Like, I'm really big in manifesting. And now, did I manifest it or had they always been there? And I just finally was on that frequency to be able to see it because I was studying it and I was aware of it. That's okay. My question. I woke up and there were two people standing in my doorway. They were short, they were bald. They looked like the typical grays. And they were just standing there looking at me. I fell back asleep. And so I don't know. It's like I saw that when I see stuff that's weird like that. I'm just like, oh, whatever. I just go back to sleep. It's either I go to sleep, but I feel like they have an ability to put you to sleep. There's some sort of hypnotic trance that they put us in, I think.
Do you think that you fell asleep because you were tired or did you fall asleep because they had something to do with that?
Yes, they did. I think they did. The second time it happened was not too far after that. I woke up to a hooded figure standing by my bed. It looked like the Grim Reaper. It had hands that were sticking like in front of it, like a praying mantis. And it was moving weird. It wasn't moving like a human.
Now,
moving oddly.
On that subject right there, there are many people that believe in demons and think that aliens are fallen angels and are creating havoc. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, man, that's something we've been talking about a lot lately on my channels. I don't know for sure. Being a remote viewer, we don't label things because I don't know for sure. But I do know a lot of people do think that they are demons. And I got to say, I never thought that before, but now I'm leaning that way where it could be.
Isn't that interesting? I've watched paranormal investigations where the people went there because it was an alien report from the homeowners. When you watch a paranormal investigation and then you watch an alien investigation, they almost have the same orbs, the black shadows that run across the floor. Yeah. We cannot be alone in the universe.
Here's another kicker for you. I wonder, are aliens even from outer space? And are they from inner Earth? Like, interdimensional?
My husband.
And I question that now. I question everything. But I have to wonder, one of the most controversial shows that I've done in a long time, and I do a lot of controversial shows, we talked about inner Earth and the ice wall, and a possible flat Earth theory. And some people say that outer space is actually just beyond the ice wall. And good Lord, that's divisive, Farah. I tell you what, I've never had so much discussion and arguments on my Instagram page. I just let people go at it. And I was like, oh, y'all fight amongst yourselves. I'm just putting it out there. People get mad about it.
Admiral Burke, you can't go against what he said that in Antarctica, there is a whole nother Earth or area. He's a Navy special officer. And he was an admiral, for God's sake. He wasn't crazy. Yeah. And he documented that in his notes, what he saw. So I definitely believe that there's an inner Earth.
There absolutely is. There's totally inner Earth, for sure. I stumbled across inner Earth, the entrances to inner Earth in some of my remote viewing data. And a lot of these targets have inner Earth connections. Let's say the Giant of Kandahar. Mm-hmm. Let's say the Phantom Island of High Brazil. That's from inner Earth.
Maybe that's what Atlantis is.
Could be. So I had a connection with inner Earth with the Dyatlov Pass incident. If you're familiar with that, with the nine Russian hikers.
I'm actually doing an episode on that in a couple.
I did four or five remote viewing targets on it. That was the first remote viewing show I ever did publicly. On Dyatlov Pass. I'll send you a link.
Yes, please do.
Those hikers, they got off course. They were supposed to check into some kind of checkpoint. And they had gone to the Ural Mountains in Russia. They were doing a hike for fun. They never checked in. A search team was sent out to go look for them. Their bodies were found. They were all killed.
Yeah.
And so it was not ripped out. It was removed, which is ripped out too. But here's the thing about remote viewing. We get to do deep mind probes and talk to these people psychically. I got to talk to all of them. So the story behind it goes that it was suspected that the Russian Yeti had attacked them and killed them. or they got scared out of their tent by the Russian Yeti, and they ran, all died of hypothermia. That was the story. There was a picture on one of the cameras that had been found that had a picture of what looked like a Russian Yeti. I think it was a man in a snowsuit, personally. That's my opinion on it. But I, not to say that they weren't potentially stalked out by a Russian Yeti. That's totally possible. I know for a fact through my data. I'm not saying it's my fact. I'm saying it's the data. They'd wandered off into an area they weren't supposed to be in. It was patrolled by the Russian government, the military. And what they each told me was that something came from the sky. It looked like lights on with umbrellas attached to them, falling from the sky, and it scared them. They all took off running. They were chased down by the military. They all died. The first two groups of people that were found, they died of hypothermia and exposure. Then 2 or 3 months later, the last four were found. Yeah, there were two bodies of two men and then two women and a man. And then there were one woman and three men at the very end. And the last four that were found, I believe, they had injuries that consisted of being dropped from somewhere very high, like a car accident. They had compound fractures in their chest and stuff like that. Just really weird. Like they had been hit really hard with something, or they had been dropped from the sky. And they had patients. They were mutilated like cattle on their human body. Well, this is interesting because I had picked up that there was ET involvement. I picked up military and ET involvement. And I got in the lady's head whose tongue had been removed. Like her eyelids were cut off or lips or something. Like her face was mutilated, just like cattle basically gets mutilated by ET or whatever doing it. And I asked her what happened. She said they had all trespassed. They had gotten off course. And they were pretty much chased down. She said that she was attacked by soulless beings. Now, I was picking up on words like commandant and I don't know, ranks of, I got people's names that were involved. They're like Russian names. My data was wild.
All in all, Jessica, do you feel it is some type of cover up?
Yeah, it was 100% a cover up. Most of these things that I look into are cover ups, government cover ups.
What do you think is the reason for that? Is it because they think we can't handle truth? Is it that simple?
Partially, yeah. We've been lied to. Our history is not what we've been taught. And that's a dangerous thing about remote viewers, is that we can see the truth behind things that other people want to hide. It was definitely a government cover up. And I want it all the time. Like, why don't they just tell us the truth?
Well,
it would change the course of history. More people would wake up and we'd revolt against the people in charge.
I'm ready for it.
I'm trying to help out. I'm doing it with a smile on my face and my Southern charm. We're working on it. We're trying to expose the truth.
What would you say to someone that wants to start getting into this for the right reasons? What should be their course of action?
Yeah. Well, as far as remote viewings, that kind of stuff, when I was taught it, I'd never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. Since then, now that I've been doing it for so long, part of my training was doing the Monroe Gateway program. The Gateway program is what we call it. The hemisync. And you hear about the binaural beat. Just learning psychic skills, opening up your psychic abilities, becoming aware of them. And there are programs all over online that you can take to learn remote viewing and to practice it. I highly recommend doing it one-on-one with somebody or going somewhere like the Monroe Institute or the Silva Mind Control. That's a good one. We had one of the instructors come out and work with us to help teach us, in addition to the head of my team and other people that did a lot of the training with us. I highly recommend that. There are people such as my friend, Tony Rodriguez. He's one of the people that speaks out about the Secret Space Program. Tony has a group of remote viewers that want to learn remote viewing. And I send him blind targets sometimes for them to do. And I'll be working with him in the future on doing some of this. But he has a great group. Let's look up Tony Rodriguez, remote viewing. He told me that he was taught remote viewing in the Secret Space Program. Well, I'm going to be hanging out with him next week at the Journey to Truth Conference. Okay. We're both presenting there. This is up in Grafton, Illinois. It's coming up the end of May.
Two quick questions on an alien topic. When we listen to a lot of alien stories, it's something about losing time. What do you think that is from? How does that play a part in an alien abduction or an alien sighting? What do you think the link is with that?
It happens all the time. Time is an illusion. Only humans adhere to time. They're able to do time edits and things like that. Just like with the Secret Space Program, with Tony, for instance. He says that he was taken. I don't know his whole story perfectly, but I do know the gist of it. I believe he was taken at some point and he was gone for 20 years. And then he was brought back. Like nothing happened. Just basically used as a slave to create stars and work on planets, transport aliens and all sorts of wild stuff. It's amazing. I can't wait to actually hang out with him next week.
That would be awesome.
Some of these targets that Barry Littleton has me remote view are off planet, like the TRAPPIST-1 star system. I just had a set of numbers. So you can't really dispute this data that I'm getting. It correlates with what other people have said about TRAPPIST-1 star system. I was picking up on, I was sucked through a wormhole while I was remote viewing, and I ended up on a planet that I thought was Earth in the future, but there was total slavery going on there. It was like human slaves and ET slaves. It looked like big cities there, but they were like futuristic cities on Earth.
And we were slaves? Oh my God.
Well, humanoids. Yeah. I can't say it was all people from Earth because it was on another star system. It's like dwarf planet. It's in our solar system. I think Makemake and Sedna and Hymea. I think the three planets that you have in your remote view. It's crazy. Super crazy. There was slavery going on there, but it was just like Earth, but in the future.
That's scary.
So, there were shopping centers there. It was like TJ Maxx and stuff.
But it was like to TJ Maxx and get some clearance.
They had malls. And that's why it was so confusing when you told me that wasn't Earth, because I was like, oh, it was Earth in the future. Barry always asked me when I get that, what do you think that was? I was like, well, I think it was Earth in the future. He was like, no, what? It was not Earth. But that it's a planet, though. I was 100% on target.
Wow, Jessica, you are amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I just have fun. I don't know what I'm
doing. When you think about Eisenhower, where he supposedly made a deal for technology, they can come and experiment on us whenever they want. Do you think they are doing that?
Yeah, that gets us into the whole demonic aspect as well. I think that did happen. I really do. And the way I looked at it the other day, I had my buddy Dennis Carroll on my show. He's a demonologist. Mm-hmm. And I asked him about that. I said, what about when Eisenhower made that deal with the aliens? What if he was making the deal with the devil to sign us all on our behalf as humans, making a deal to give our souls over basically to demonic forces? It was just a question. I'm not saying that's true. Everything's a contract, right? The demonic stuff, it's all contracts. It's like selling your soul to the devil, right? It's like he sold us all over or to the demons. But what's the price of the technology? Technology's taken over.
There is so much chaos. Every year, putting a clip of everything going on around the world right now, it looks like the worst place you could ever live.
We allow them to do stuff to us unwittingly, most of us. Mm-hmm. When we're born, our parents sign us over to the state, to the government, with a piece of paper called our birth certificate, our social security cards. It's like we're contracted slaves. I know that sounds a little bit out there, perhaps, but and you got to think about it as like in a demonic way. It is demonic.
You want to go back?
It's just food for thought.
To the Holocaust. With all the numbers on their arms, what do you think our social security number is?
Yeah, it's like a barcode.
I never thought about it that way.
This is fun talking with you.
Part two, part three,
we're
part
on that
two,
vibe. We're on the same frequency, Farah.
I said, I felt a connection. My property, Jessica, I've caught tree knocks. I've caught a Bigfoot howl. I'll send that to you. Just tell me what you think. Yeah. Like I said, it's not that I say it's 100% this, but this cave, I want to know more about it. I know that the Chickasaw and the Cherokee were both here. This was their land. Also, it's the paranormal bubble. The particle reactor is not far away. It's about less than 2 hours.
Oh, that's what I'm excited about right there. It causes a lot of hyperemesis.
Yes. One of the best dogman sightings happened less than an hour away from me on Black Mountain.
Those things can travel pretty far, too. And the zombie bear. Don't forget, that's where Tony Ahrens and Amber Miller were killed, where I remote viewed the zombie bear over in, what is it, Cook County or Cott County?
I will have to look at that. I didn't know that.
Oh, my gosh. They were both attacked by packs of wild dogs. And I was asked to look into it because Amber lost like 70 or was like 90% of her flesh or something. She lived for 5 days after that happened.
Good God. What?
And a pack of wild dogs was blamed on her death. Antonio was on the same road two different times, like a month apart.
Well, does that have any correlation with the LBL stories in the 80s about some people being killed?
I remote viewed that too. Yeah, the land between the lakes. Absolutely. It's not the same. It's different. But I can't even say it was really I don't think it was a dog man that killed Amber and Tony, but it was what my data suggested was a zombie bear, which is really crazy. I just talked with D.A. Roberts about that. He's coming on the show this week on my show. We talk about that. We're going to talk about it.
I would love to learn more about all that you do, all that you've seen. You are just such a fascinating person. I have never spoke with anyone like you before. And my God, I feel blessed.
This is fun. This is awesome. It's good vibing with somebody. You're in the know. And
I definitely am. But I want to do a part 2, 3, 4, 10.
Yeah, we can do it anytime.
So whatever you want to teach, I am all about it. But okay,
you got it.
For now, for ending this episode, please tell all my wonderful listeners where you can be found, your shows, your handles, everything.
Okay, thank you. I can be found at thecryptidhuntress.com. That's my website. It's got all my shows on there, all of my events that I'm going to be presenting at and speaking at and making appearances at. I've got a YouTube channel. It's The Cryptid Huntress. Please subscribe, like those videos, share them out. And I do a live show every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And I bring the best in the cryptid community and field and any kind of paranormal, supernatural stuff, demonology, you name it. I bring them on my show. And Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, I do a show where I remote view weird stuff like cryptids and paranormal encounters and animal attacks that probably weren't real animals. They're usually Dogman or Bigfoot.
Something else.
So we look in, that's Thursday. And then every weekend, Saturday and Sunday night, I am a weekend host at Spaced Out Radio. I have a show called Off the Trails, 10 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and Sunday night on Spaced Out Radio. That's on YouTube and Facebook with Spaced Out Radio. That's where you can find me.
If you are into the cryptids and the paranormal and the strange like I am, you want to get it from the right people. Jessica is your girl. She has so much knowledge and research to share. She's great to listen to. Please check her out. Jessica, again, the pleasure is all mine having you here. And other than that, we're going to end it here. Hopefully, Jessica will join us again. And,
absolutely. Thank you.
All right, Sinister Seekers, we hope that you enjoyed the eerie tale that we spun for you today. Remember, we drop episodes on the 1st, the 10th, and the 20th of every month. So don't miss out on your regular dose of macabre content and hit that follow button if you haven't already. We're haunting all the streaming platforms, so you can catch us wherever you prefer. Connect with us on the dark corners of social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and TikTok. We're lurking around every corner. For those of you who crave more details, check out studiosessions.blog. It's an extension of our show, which features detailed show notes, links, audio and visual aids, and more. This year is all about sharing, because sharing is caring. So help us reach new listeners by spreading the word. Share your favorite episode and let's build a community of sinister seekers. Keep your eyes and ears peeled for exclusive content and goodies. But before we go, do us a solid, leave us a rating or review, because crafting these episodes takes so much work. Your love and feedback mean the world to Courtney and I. So until next time, Sinister Seekers, stay true.
Stay you.
Stay sinister.
Hold on to your seats, folks. Studio Sinister presents Portlock, where even ghosts fear to tread. Prepare for a roller coaster of terror in the ghost town of Portlock, Alaska, the place where hairy beasts roam, devilish critters run amok, and a wailing spirit takes evening strolls in the woods. Oh, and let's not forget the unsolved mysteries that'll have you scratching your head like a confused ghost. Step right up to witness the 1930s drama unfold with loggers meeting their match in logging equipment. Seriously, who needs enemies when you have machinery like that? And residents meeting their mysterious ends. It's a real estate market crash like no other. Join Studio Sinister for a spooky episode that'll have you chuckling nervously as you tiptoe through the haunted tales of Portlock. Are you brave enough to face the ghostly and ghoulish details? Tune in if you dare, dropping April 1st.